Welcome to the award-winning Dare to Dream podcast with Debbie Dashinger, covering metaphysics, ETs, shamanism, and channeling. Here you will find spiritual inspiration from today's thought leaders, along with cutting-edge insights from our interstellar brothers and sisters and ancient shamanic wisdom. Now, here's a new episode of Dare to Dream with your host, Debbie Dashinger.
Welcome to Dare to Dream. I'm so excited for today's show. Truly, truly I am. It's a beautiful time of this year for a lot of reflection and a lot of looking forward. What is the ending of this year, the wrapping up, so to speak, of this year and all that has preceded it, even though it's all an illusion? What does it mean for us individually and collectively? And then going forward, what might we anticipate? How can we best prepare? Well, no better person to talk to than my guest today, Daryl Anka, who is here. You might know him as the man who channels Bashar. And today is really going to be about how to be totally unlimited, unrestrained, and reminders, stepping into the fact that we were truly made in the image of the infinite. This show, Dare to Dream, won 3 Talk Radio Positive Change Awards, COVR Award for Best Podcast, Welp Magazine named Dare to Dream one of the top 20 best podcasts to listen to this year, and it is high ranking on Apple Podcast. And as a friendly reminder, you can truly find this show, youtube.com/Debbie Dashinger, and on every major podcast site, plus BBS Radio. This show is sponsored by Dr. Dane Here and Access Consciousness. They do energy work out into the world. So if you'd like to become a facilitator, or if you'd like to take one of their classes, go to Dr. Dane Here, HEER.com. If you would like to learn more about your galactic ancestry, I am offering you a free video and report that deep dives into over 19 different starseed types so you can find out and connect with your star lineage. Go to DebbieDashinger.com/starseed. That's DebbieDashinger.com/starseed and get your free gift. Well, my guest and I are going to actually be speaking at a lot of the same events coming up. That's uber exciting for me, and that definitely signifies a new year is a coming. So the first one I want to tell you about is going to be the Channel Panel held in Sedona, January 2025. This is going to be a weekend of transformative workshops and keynotes from renowned channelers like Daryl Anka, Wendy Kennedy, Jamie Price, Rob Gauthier, and Lisa Royal Holt. Wow, what a lineup. These are opportunities for you to connect with like-minded individuals and actually gain profound insights. What I say is, what a way to start your new year. The best way. Secure your spot. Go to DebbieDashinger.com/Sedona. And then in February, the LA Conscious Life Expo, its 23rd annual year, is back. February 7th through the 10th, 2025. The link and the description is in the show notes. Go to DebbieDashinger.com/CLE. Of course, Daryl is going to be doing his yearly channeling of Bashar. While there, I will be speaking on Friday night and also moderating panels. So please join us. I love when you guys come up at these events and let me know you listened to the show and how you got there. So let's get on to the main event. Daryl Anka, my guest, is a well-known channeler who communicates with an extraterrestrial entity called Bashar. Bashar is from a parallel reality and exists in a time frame that we perceive of as the future. Daryl has given international seminars for over 30 years and is a frequent guest speaker at conferences. He's written more than 20 metaphysical books that have been published in the US and Japan. He's a writer, producer, director, through his Zia Films LLC production company, and was born in Ottawa, Canada. Darryl's journey into the esoteric realms began in the 1980s after a transformative encounter with extraterrestrial intelligence. And you can learn much more about Bashar at bashar.org. And with that, I welcome Darryl Anka back for the fifth, the sixth, the multiple time on To Dare to Dream. It's great to have you here again.
Thanks, Debbie. It's great to be here again. Thank you so much for having this opportunity.
I was reflecting about you because I know your original story when you were young and you were in a car with some friends and you had a UFO sighting. And I was thinking about the many times I myself have driven back and forth. I live in the Valley. So either from LA to San Diego or San Diego to the Valley. And I have had so many experiences of spacecraft sightings. And I was thinking, isn't that interesting that they do tend to populate at times our freeways? Why do you think that is?
Well, I don't know. Maybe it just depends on where you happen to be. If they're making a connection with your vibration, like they made a connection with mine, because when I had the two different sightings in LA in 1973, you know, I've only in the years since that, I've only seen one reference that somebody made to being able to see the same sighting at the same time. Because when I actually had the sighting, all of us in the car all saw the UFO very clearly, but I was looking around. No other drivers were really looking up at this thing. So it may have been on a specific frequency that was for us alone. That happens sometimes, where even in a group, some people will see the UFO and some people in the same group will not. So it really depends on the frequency you're on. And therefore, you know, if you're driving around and you happen to be on the freeway more often than not, that's probably where they're going to show up if they're trying to make a connection with you.
100%. And I really relate to that. One of the many occasions I've seen spacecraft, there were four of us doing CE5 work out in the middle of nowhere at the foot of a mountain in Joshua Tree. And we left there at 2 a.m. Nothing had happened, but it was a lovely evening. And coming back in the freeway by the 10 and the 60, where they intersect, boom, a spacecraft right in front of the truck we were in. All four of us saw it. We could get off to the side and stop and get out and take a few pictures. Every other truck and car kept going forward.
Right.
We were mystified. It's like, how does nobody see this with no propulsion?
Yeah.
This is phenomenal.
Yeah. And that's interesting that you say that, because the two sightings I had were both over one. The first one was over the intersection of two freeways. The second one was over the intersection of two major streets. So maybe there's something about intersections that they're trying to get across to us too, how things cross or come together, those two pathways, those crossing points, that may have something to do with it.
Yeah, beautiful. I'm going to pay attention for sure. I like that. And that's something I hadn't considered before. I want to talk a little bit about timelines. I think when we first hear about timelines as 3D humans, it's like parallel realities, you know? But then the more we come to understand it and start to wrap our heads around it, it begins to make sense. And certainly the power of choice for what timeline we're on makes sense. I would like to know if you know, let's say we're making new choices, powerful, positive choices. If we do indeed shift our timeline, how do we know? Are there markers? Are there reference points so we can know, oh, I'm now existing on a different timeline?
Well, yeah, I mean, it doesn't have to be that you absolutely always know exactly where the point is. Because again, Bashar is saying we're shifting billions of times a second. You don't want to have to spend your brain thinking about that every single second. So it might just be the idea that when you do have any kind of signs that you are shifting more through a series in the way that you prefer to, through a series of timelines, a series of parallel realities in the way that you would prefer to, that you're getting more positive synchronicity, That's one of the major symbols and reflections
Oh.
of navigating yourself in a more positive direction, is that things start kind of falling into place magically. Things show up exactly when and where and how you need them to, for information, for meeting people. You know, your life just kind of becomes this explosion of synchronicities. So that's definitely one of the signs. But also that, you know, you feel more balanced, lighter, that you get a sense of acceleration and momentum. You start to see things in the world that you're now inhabiting that are more reflective for you in your personal life of continuing to move in that direction, things falling into place that are more opportunities to be able to act on that are representative of what you prefer. So, you know, all those things and probably many more signs are an indication that at least you are continuing to navigate in a direction that's more in alignment with your true vibration, your core frequency.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I like that idea so much because I can certainly see a lot of synchronicities and a lot of preferred
Right.
experiences occurring. Is there a way then, when we start seeing this and we're on a much more positive trajectory, that we can look at, I'm just going to use this word, like the sad sack path that we had been on? Can we then influence that from the position we're in to say, I want to elevate you and any other parallel or concurrent reality. I'd like to elevate all of you right now so we
Well,
all rise.
that happens automatically. You don't have to really think about it because, again, anytime you change yourself in the present, you're in a sense changing your past and your future at the same time. Because, again, from a linear perspective, if you actually have become a different person, linearly speaking, in order for that to make sense as to how you became this person, you have to have the kind of past that created this person. So you're automatically connecting into the parallel realities now that might be different a little bit than what you were connecting in before that make more sense to connect to in a linear way to give you a rational reason for why you are this different person today. Because when you change sufficiently enough, you know, you get people recognize like, oh, you're so different. What is it that's different about you? You seem to be very different than you used to be. And so that might be your reflection or your indication that not only have you really decided to be a different person, but that you may actually have also altered some of the events or connections you made in the past to make you this person today. And you get that reflection in somebody coming up to you and saying, wow, you seem so different. I'm not exactly sure who you are right now. So, you know, you can get those signs when and where you need to, but again, it's not always important that you get them. It's just more important that you focus on what it is that you're preferring, what it is that you're excited about, and keep moving forward. You know, so you'll get the signs, you'll get the indications, but more importantly than actually even getting those indications is the ability to continue to act and move forward in the way that you prefer to in your life.
Received. Thank you. What is new at this time and coming down the pike in 2025? What are you privy to that we may not be aware of? That would be good to know.
Well, again, certainly I think we are truly on the verge of contact. There are more and more indications of that. We recently had another you know, congressional hearing on UAPs and UFOs. And so I think all of these are, you know, sort of indicators that we're getting closer and closer. Now, of course, Bashar has said this introduction of extraterrestrials publicly, openly to our society will probably happen within the next 5 years. I think that still holds, even though there may have been some slight changes based on different events that have happened in our reality that may, you know, maybe it'll push it back a year or ahead a year or whatever. But he's given us this 5-year window and all of the shifting that may go on in terms of the actual timeline is still all happening within that 5 years. So I think 5 years is the outside window that he gave us, knowing that, you know, an event that he originally said might happen in 27 might now happen in 28 because of different things going on in our society. And so they need more preparation time, what have you. But it's all still within the next 5 years. And I'm really excited about that. I mean, it seems like that's not so very far away. And I think that might be surprising to people. But one of the things that Bashar has said that makes it make sense that it would seem to happen that soon is that there have been a lot of things we haven't known about going on behind the scenes with regard to extraterrestrials interacting with certain people on our planet, with some scientists, other people in the government on a very, very limited basis, but that have set the ball rolling, that have set certain things up so that it would allow for contact to be introduced within the next 5 years. So even though we haven't known about all that behind the scenes stuff, that's what makes, contact in the next 5 years seem so sudden. But it is the end result of things that have actually been going on for years and years behind the scenes in our society that we simply haven't been told about. So I think when we are told about all that, just before the introduction of the ETs, it'll make sense that within the next 5 years doesn't seem to be so sudden based on everything that's gone before.
Have you been involved with that, with the work with the scientists or government at any level?
Bashar has been involved in a minor way with a couple of scientists that have to do with talking about things like free energy devices and so on and so forth. Not massively, but I think there have been other things that have been happening physically with other extraterrestrials, especially some of the Pleiadians and so on and so forth that have been interacting with some of our scientists and government officials. That is really more what Bashar is referring to about what's going on behind the scenes.
Wow, that is so cool. I cannot wait till that is disclosed. And I'm really glad you brought up disclosure. Yes, I think most of us are paying attention to what goes on there. But I'm wondering, because boy, that is the slowest train I think most of us have ever seen. Is the real info, the real disclosure coming from, going to come from us, people like you and I, people in our tribe, in our community, and the very brave whistleblowers who are stepping forward? Is that the real disclosure?
Well, I think the whistleblowers certainly have a lot to do with it, and so does the public, of course. But I do think there will be official channels. And in fact, somebody even suggested the other day that maybe the congressional hearings that we're having now may actually be one of the forums in which disclosure may ultimately occur. I'm not saying that it will. I'm just saying that's a possibility. I mean, this is why I'm wearing this shirt today, Citizens for Disclosure. I think the more the public gets into the idea of saying that we truly want disclosure, it's time for us to know what's going on with regard to our relationship with our extraterrestrial community, then it will come out. Now, obviously, there are those that are a little bit resistant to it, or maybe a lot resistant to it, because it certainly will change everything on the planet. And, there's a lot of people who have a vested interest in certain things not changing. I think this is inevitable. I think they're going to have to let go of that resistance at some point, or they will just simply have to go off and, be on their own somewhere. I'm not sure where that would be, in another parallel version of Earth, that will allow them to continue to live in whatever world they want to live in, while the rest of us who are open to contact will enjoy the benefits of having a connection to our galactic family, which I think would be extremely beneficial for people at large, regardless of what certain special interests might want. So I think, that time is coming to an end where all of those kinds of secrets and things simply no longer apply. It's important for the evolution of humanity to move forward at this time. It's been, as you say, long enough. But I think by the time it comes out, in a sense, the joke is it's kind of going to be the biggest secret that everyone already knows.
That's great. It's so true. The biggest secret that's a non-secret that
Yeah.
everybody's already in on.
Well, yeah, because sometimes, people just don't talk a lot about their experiences, but when you really do start talking to people about your own experiences, I find that more often than not, they'll say, Oh yeah, and I had this experience and I saw this and I saw that and these beings showed up in my bedroom and it's like a lot of things are happening with people that they just don't normally talk about unless they feel it's safe to talk to you because you've already admitted you've had these experiences and then they know you're a kindred spirit and you won't laugh at them or ridicule them. You'll take them seriously. So I think a lot of things are happening to more people than we think. So I think it's actually going to be quite a relief when disclosure finally happens, when the introduction of ETs finally happens officially, because then a lot of people can kind of sigh and relax and go, I wasn't crazy. See, this was happening all the time. Now, some of the stories may be a little exaggerated, some things may be misinterpreted. That's fine. It'll all come together in the wash once the introductions are made between humanity and extraterrestrials to figure out exactly what was really going on in everyone's experience. But nevertheless, I do think people are having more experiences than we think. And I think that when ETs are revealed to us, a lot of people are going to sigh with relief and say, finally, I can talk about this openly.
Yeah, I look forward to it as well. I'm also curious about finances. I keep hearing interesting things regarding finances on this planet going forward. Do you have any intel if banks or the money, the dollar, is going to crumble, if it's going to lose its value? What kind of changes are going to happen to the financial paradigm?
My understanding is that one of the things that will happen at some point in the near future, that's a relative term, I don't know what how many years that means, is that we will probably shift to a digital form of currency worldwide. Now, I'm not talking about cryptocurrency. That's something that's an interim step in my understanding, but we will have an official digital currency at some point because in some senses it's just easier. Of course, again, like anything is open to negative manipulation. So, there have to be safeguards in place for all of that. Ultimately, and I'm talking way down the road, as Bashar says, we'll ultimately, create an economy that is actually based on the skills and abilities of people that will be operating through more of a synchronous kind of an interaction. Where we'll have something somebody needs, they'll have something we need, and these kinds of exchanges. It's almost like going back to a trade and barter system, but on a much higher, more refined level, with synchronicity kind of being the guiding line of you're going to need to be exactly where you need to be to give this person what they need, and you're going to get exactly what you need from that person in order to allow you to move forward in the way that you need to. So, but that's many, many years down the road. In the meantime, the idea of having a larger scale worldwide digital currency in a positive way can help us sort of lighten up and loosen up the idea that this is all about energy exchange. It's all about the idea of creating something that is helpful for everyone, that is equal for everyone, that doesn't create the idea of poverty. It doesn't create an imbalance in terms of people who have and people who don't have. So, it's got to include all of those factors in it, or it really won't work. It'll just be another form of what we already have in a different disguise. So, I think the digital currency that is being referred to by different psychics and by Bashar is something that is a more sophisticated system that is probably based on different forms of blockchain technology that will make sure that it is unbreakable, that it is something that serves everyone in an equal capacity to whatever degree that they're willing to participate in it. So I think that's coming, but I can't say exactly when. But except for the fact that I believe we are in an overall period of resetting humanity, which is something that started around 2020 and will probably last until about 2050. So this is kind of a 30-year reset. So somewhere in all of that window, I believe some of the things we're talking about today will occur and will start to shift, especially after 2030 or 2033. After the introduction of extraterrestrials publicly, they're going to help us with a lot of these concepts. One of the things that Bashar has said recently is, when we talk about the idea of open contact, a lot of people just kind of think, okay, well, there's the ETs, and here we are, and we're still going to be running our planet in the same way, but we'll be interacting with ETs. That's not necessarily true. The idea of open contact, I think people have to sort of wrap their minds around the fact that if we're inviting open contact and we're joining a galactic organization, ETs are going to be involved in every phase of our society. They're going to be involved with us politically. They're going to be involved with us sociologically, technologically, economically, spiritually. Every single aspect of our society is going to be intertwined with what they bring to this planet. So a lot of that is a massive change. I think we have to open up to the idea that we're not going to necessarily be running the things in the way that we used to, that we're going to get help from them to understand what planetary management is all about, because they see things on a bigger scale, on a holistic scale. They see things in terms of planetary operations, not country operations, but planetary operations. So it doesn't mean that we're going to dissolve all the different cultures that we have. I think that those are valuable and valid expressions of the differences within all of us that are to be cherished. But I do think that in terms of the way that the planet itself is managed, we're going to learn a lot from the ETs about how to do it for the benefit of all humanity while still retaining, the vibrant differences that really enrich us and create a tapestry of humanity that we can appreciate in from many different points of view. So it's a balancing act, I think, that's coming within the next couple of decades.
There's so much to unpack there. There are so many questions that come up around those wonderful possibilities. So, when interstellar connections are made, when humans join the galactic community, what does species integration look like? So, for example, might a Yael or a Sasani family buy a house next door to me? Or is it more likely that we would live in separate communities for different star nations?
I think at first there might be some degree of some separation so that everyone feels comfortable with the idea of integrating galactic individuals into our society. But eventually, over time, we're going to blend just like anything. We're going to be curious about each other. We're going to exchange ideas with each other. And I do believe that in certain ways, when it's actually physically possible, when there's compatibility genetically, I believe that we will probably merge with each other in a lot of ways, for those that can do that. So, a lot of the ETs that are going to show up at first are going to be genetically very much like us, because they are, in a sense, our distant cousins for a variety of reasons. We won't get into all of that right now. But I do believe we are genetically compatible with some of the ETs because they're already related to us genetically in certain ways. Later on, we're going to be introduced to ETs that are nothing like us, and there's no way that you can actually mate with something like that. But for people, for beings like the Pleiadians and some of the hybrids, we're still dealing with essentially what we would consider to be variations of human genetics. And so I do think we are actually genetically compatible enough to be able to actually have offspring with some of the ET species that will be introduced to us. And I think over time, it'll be just as natural to have offspring with some of them as it would be to simply have offspring with another race of humans on Earth. So, we'll get over our xenophobia, I think, about that in the decades to come. I'm not saying this is necessarily going to happen even within some of the lifetimes of the people that exist now. But over time, again, this is a long process of evolution for humanity. And I think after 2050, things will probably accelerate a lot more quickly based on the changes that humanity is going to go through and the different directions that we're going to wind up going in after that time. So that probably within 100 or 200 years, the idea of extraterrestrial and earthbound offspring will probably not be unusual at all.
That's amazing to me. And it makes me a little sad I'm not here for all that, but I'll probably be someplace fabulous wherever it is, all
Oh,
that's going
I
on.
think we'll be involved in some way, shape, or form. It's either going to be involved incarnationally, or going to be involved in spirit in terms of helping people and guiding people who are in physical reality through that evolutionary path. So I don't think we're going to be left out. It depends on just, where we need to be when those things are happening and how it is that we can best help that process move forward to the benefit of humanity.
Yes, and for folks who are saying, gosh, I want to know more about the genetics that Daryl's referring to, he honestly has been on the show at least five other times. And just do a search, if you're on YouTube, on my channel, do a search on our names, and all of them will come up, and there's some incredible other information to fill this in. And so just to put a cap on this, Daryl, what we're talking about, is there potential challenges regarding interspecies romance? And once they do have children, might the star children go to school alongside each other, alongside Earth children?
Well, I think schools will be very, very different by the time that happens. I think, again, ETs are going to teach us more about how education can be more beneficial, more exciting, more holistically presented on Earth. So again, we're looking at decades down the line, and the idea doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to look like it looks right now. It's probably going to be a little bit more like the more advanced schools, the experimental schools that we have, where people are experiencing things in a different way. Some of these things might happen out in nature rather than in a classroom. So, and different kinds of structures may be created, different kinds of interactions may be created for children to interact with one another, both Earth human and extraterrestrial children. But the idea is, I do think that they will blend, and I do think they will be working together and teaching together and learning together. I just don't know if it will be in the kind of institutions that we have right now. I think those institutions will have to change drastically in order to accommodate everyone and give them the most beneficial way of actually absorbing information and being educated and moving forward to serve humanity in a beneficial way. So it may not really look like it looks now with ET sitting in a classroom in the same way we think of classrooms right now.
Yeah, maybe more of a Montessori school for
And
galactic
some of those
learning.
classes may take place aboard starships. So we'll see.
I attend some of the online Bashar events, and boy, occasionally there are moments that are just massive, massive for me to listen to, really eye-opening. And one of them, gosh, it was at least 6 months ago. And a woman, I was so grateful she asked this question of Bashar. And she said that she was confused about the Jewish people and the treatment. I'm someone who was born in this lifetime into the Jewish faith. And I have to admit that I too have wondered so much, like, what is the deal? I don't even understand it. And there was this incredible moment of Bashar answering her question and responding that the Jewish people, the lineage, are actually descendants of the Anunnaki. And
Well,
I think that's
everyone is.
everyone.
It's
Oh.
just that they may, along with other cultures, contain, excuse me, more of the genetic line, more of the DNA that goes back directly to the Anunnaki than some other cultures. Excuse me, I'm just getting over a cold, which is why this is happening.
Take your time.
And so the association that Bashar was making was that because early humanity's relationship with the Anunnaki was one of subservience to them, that anytime we sense or intuit more of that genetic material in someone, it sort of triggers the idea that we're made to feel less than. And we react to that. We resent that. And we project onto them that they're trying to control us. So I think it's a very subliminal kind of limbic brain reaction to sensing more genetic material from those who we considered to be our oppressors in the ancient Anunnaki relationship, and projecting that onto people who still contain more of that bloodline, which was the reason that the Hebrews were isolated from the rest of society for 40 years in the desert, was to preserve that bloodline for a variety of reasons we won't go into now. But I think that because of that preservation and because of the sensing of more of the genetic material that goes back to the Anunnaki, who we considered to be our masters at the time, then we react as if they're trying to control us, even though that may not be anything that's actually happening. And so we have to get over that energetic dichotomy, that energetic relationship of assuming that, because everyone does contain the Anunnaki genes, that's where Homo sapiens, they created Homo sapiens. So out of the Homo erectus or whatever the naturally evolved hominid was. So anytime we feel maybe a higher percentage of that, we have to get into touch with the fact that we might be energetically reacting to that vibration, and we might be reacting to it in a negative way. So that's basically the way that Bashar explained that dynamic and why that happens.
So it's a very deep
So much person.
subconscious trigger that people aren't aware of, but there's this whole playing out, this pattern that's been going on throughout history. And I'm reflecting on this, and this could trigger people to hear, but I grew up hearing this, so I'm just wondering as I hear you share this, because in the Jewish culture, they say we are the chosen people.
Well,
I'm not sure.
that's what that means. They were chosen to preserve the bloodline. It doesn't mean there aren't other cultures on the planet that also have that, but this is what's come out in Western civilization as a recognition that the genetic bloodline, all the way back to the ETs that created Homo sapiens, was more strongly preserved in Western culture through the Hebraic lines. So that's why they consider themselves to be the chosen people. They were
Fascinating.
chosen to preserve that bloodline.
Well, happy to be of service. Another time, Daryl, was September, and I know this is big for you, but I think it's good to talk about where Bashar was being asked very specific information about the 2024 elections, which thank God is over. And this is for the United States, because I know there's folks from around the world who watch this. And can you explain those predictions and offer some updated or
I
more
think what
clarity?
people need to listen to is the recent streaming that Bashar did that's called Echoes of Sedona, because he very, very clearly and in great detail outlined why he said what he said, what the reactions were to what he said, why that occurred that way. He laid it all out, and he continued to talk about the idea of what the effects are going on our planet with regard to divisiveness, and also simply the idea of how we need to overcome this. So I would, instead of trying to paraphrase anything that he said, I would turn everyone's attention who want to understand exactly why he said what he said, what that was all about, because there were definitely things going on that he didn't tell people at first, because it's partly a test to see what our reaction would be. So I would strongly encourage people to listen to the most recent streaming from Bashar Communications called Echoes of Sedona that will explain in detail and create a more positive understanding of all of that, to allow people to move forward with what was said originally in Sedona by Bashar, which was very unusual. I understand that, but there was purpose to it. He explains about what that purpose is and what the reactions are, and what the Interstellar Alliance is doing about that in respect to how contact will occur. So I would, again, strongly encourage people to listen to that last streaming event that was streamed just this past Saturday on the 23rd. And that will answer all their questions about that.
Fair. In the aftermath of the election, does it really matter who won? I mean,
No. No, it
Isn't the
doesn't.
breakdown of government and other paradigms going to break down anyway?
Yes, but I wouldn't use the word breakdown. I would use the word transform. Things do need to transform. Contact is inevitable. And really, ultimately, from Bashar's perspective, it didn't really matter what the election result was. It served a certain purpose from their perspective. And it determined for us how contact is going to occur, what the style of it, what the timing of it, what the purpose of it will be. So the only thing that made a difference is it depended on the outcome of the election in terms of what the style of contact would be, the timing of contact, the purpose of contact. So those things may have changed, but contact hasn't changed. So, and there are many things going on behind the scenes, information-wise, that are going to be coming out in the next few months that are going to color a lot of this. So it's a little too early to actually feel that we're talking about something in such absolutes, that we're talking about conclusions that are hard and fast and cannot change. Bashar is saying that's not the case. There are many, many things going on behind the scenes right now within what appears to be chaos. There's a lot of things going on, and information will be coming out on a variety of levels that are going to point us in the direction we ultimately need to be pointed to understand what's going on in our society and what the ETs are going to do in response to all of that. So I would encourage people not to make hard and fast conclusions at this particular point about what they think has happened in the elections, and let things unravel, let things unfold a little bit so we can actually start to understand the purpose of why things happened the way they did, that are going to lead us in the direction we need to go for things to change ultimately in the way that it's important for them to change for the evolution of humanity. I won't say anything more about that because I think Bashar has said it all in what he needed to deliver to us in the last streaming event.
If I understood correctly, Bashar said this might have been at CLE last year. I see all of your channelings at CLE every year. And Bashar was responding to somebody and said, 90-something percent of us have hybrid children. I was like, wow, that's fantastical to me that we may be parents to extraterrestrial children. That's a pay attention to percentage. Can you
Yeah, I
say
think he
more
was
about
talking
that?
about 90% of the people in the room, not in the world.
Oh.
In the room.
Is there any way for us ever to know if what if I have a Yael child or a Sasani child or
Well, they're not
any?
Yael or Sasani. They are their own group of children. The hybrid children are separate from those civilizations. We'll know when they come to live among us. It will be clear to us when they're introduced to us as to who those children are the children of.
Wow. Well, as someone who was born under the sign of Cancer, which is the sign of the mother, of the home, of nesting, if when that happens, that'll be so profound for me.
It'll be profound for everyone. Absolutely.
You have talked about such a beautiful subject, our greatest power as humans, and you've said it's the power to choose. I'd like to expand on how we can utilize our power of choice.
Well, again, it's about our free will. It's about following your passion. It's about being true to who you are, about being responsive to that inner core vibration, and being able to tell the difference between what is truly representative of our passion and what might be anxiety disguised as excitement. The idea of the freedom to choose requires that we be very transparent within ourselves, to investigate ourselves and be honest in our self-assessment about why we believe what we believe. Is it because we fear something, or is it really actually because we are drawn to love something? So we have to be very clear within ourselves about who we are. This goes back, as Bashar often says, to the very ancient phrase, know thyself. Once you are transparent and willing to investigate yourself in an unbiased way to know whether or not you are choosing things from fear or love, then you will have the ability to discern why you believe what you believe, and you'll be able to move forward in a clear way, making choices that are not only positive and constructive and creative for your life path, but also in service to humanity, because all of our life paths are intertwined and connected. So being of service to humanity in some way, shape, or form that is representative of our passion is usually one of the strongest ways to choose to get to learn who we really are. This is why recently, I think one of the things that Bashar shared with us that is part of the Interstellar Alliance social experiment was a step where he said, look, if you're uncertain about what to do, go and volunteer for something. Go and join an organization that helps people, that feeds people, that shelters people, that gives them more dignity, more ability to choose what they want in their lives. Go and volunteer, because when you then volunteer for something like that, you kind of get out of your own way. You stop worrying about your own thoughts and things like that, and you're very focused on the idea of helping others. And that can actually put you in touch with what you're really passionate about. You may discover one of your passions by helping someone else, because it's all about service to humanity. When you serve the whole can serve you. When you're only serving yourself, you're cutting yourself off from how the whole can serve you. So you have to serve others in order to be served, because you're part of the whole. So following your passion, the freedom to choose to be who you truly are, a lot of times has to do with knowing yourself and also just sort of getting out of your own way by being of service to others in a way that will allow you to experience that everything is connected, everything is synchronicity, and the orchestration that works best for you will start to reveal itself as you open up and relax and stop trying to control everything, but just let it come to you, let your life unfold in a way that is magical and in a way that is more representative of who we all truly are in our heart of hearts, in our souls. So I think that's what gives us the power to really make the choices that will not only serve us, but serve everyone else.
Yeah, and I think also be prepared. It can be a complete surprise. Because if anybody had told me I would be on the path doing the work I am, talking at the events I am, all of what my life has become, I wouldn't believe it. I would never believe it, right? And so the fact that everything unfolded, definitely magical is a beautiful word for it. And synchronistic, absolutely, all of the above. But to just get out of the way, you call it following your excitement and passion. I've always said the only thing, the one thing I've done really right in life is I followed energy. That was my description that something would arrive and it didn't matter logically. There was no logic involved, but something would arrive on my path and I'd go, ooh, that seems
Well,
really
it
interesting.
resonates. It resonates. That's what Bashar is talking about in terms of the passion and excitement, curiosity, attraction. It's something that resonates with your core. It feels right to you. But again, you have to be honest within yourself to make sure that you're not responding to something from an anxiety vibration and disguising it as excitement because you're afraid to look within yourself to find out what you're actually anxious about. So that's why it's so important to be transparent with yourself, because people can fool themselves and be in denial and actually disguise anxiety, thinking it's excitement. I get this question all the time. It's like, what about the people who are passionate about killing? That's not passion. That's the mistake they make, is they're defining anxiety as if it's excitement because they're not honest with themselves about why they're feeling what they're feeling. They're not in touch with why those beliefs exist within them. And so what they're describing is not passion, is not excitement. It's anxiety disguised as excitement. This takes great honesty and self-investigation to know the difference.
Yes, and there's so many examples of that as you're speaking. I'm thinking, obviously, people who stay in a relationship because they're afraid if I leave this, I'll be alone, or afraid of what will happen to the kids. Definitely, this is kind of huge in the spiritual community, folks who have a tendency to stay at a job period or a corporate setting, which for most of us spiritual messengers, it's really not appropriate. for
Right.
our beings. We don't
For a lot
flow
of
with
people,
things
no.
like that. Leaving a country, there's many choices, or even traveling. I used to stop, this is an example even of me. Many years ago, I wanted to travel. I mean, travel is in my blood, and I've been traveling since I'm a little girl. But I got to this obstacle in my life where I became afraid of the world, and I became afraid of traveling. I was single. I was afraid of traveling alone as a woman. And even though there may be some reason to that, it stopped me, as opposed to finding ways to create safety for me to
Right.
do it. So it took years to get through that, to realign with my passion. And I'm really glad I did because I love traveling.
Yeah, there is all, if you're creative and imaginative enough and willing to look for it, there will always be a path that works for you to be able to act on your passion. So people shouldn't let themselves stop themselves from thinking, oh, now I can't do that anymore. Always look, there's always an alternative. You just have to be imaginative and creative enough to find it or even create it. Sometimes you have to create that path with your imagination and creativity because there is always a way that you can still act on your passion, even when it seems like you can't. You
Yeah.
just have to look for it. And sometimes that's the important part of the process is to create that path for yourself and let it be okay.
Yeah. So let's take where we're at right now with this conversation and let's take it to the next level. Next level would be, how can we be totally unlimited, unrestrained? I love these words, and made in the image of the infinite, which I feel actually means made to be. And operate as infinite.
Well, in his recent talk, Bashar talked about the importance of two of the principles that he's talked about before. These are major principles that allow us to move forward in a way that really allows us to be who we are. Number one is the fourth step of the formula is stay in a positive state no matter what happens. Even if what happens is something that we objectively don't prefer. You have to know it's there for a reason. There's a lesson to be learned here. There's knowledge to be gained. There's experience to be had by this thing having manifested. So if you stay in a positive state, again, you can be inspired to use your imagination and creativity to get a benefit out of what it is that's happening. And this flows into the second principle, which is it doesn't matter what happens. It only matters what you do with what happens that makes the difference in your life. So it's how you respond to something that determines the effect you get out of it. Because we're the ones putting meaning into things. We're the ones buying into and believing in definitions that we attach to things. And it's those definitions that we believe to be true that color how we experience anything that manifests. As Bashar has said, life itself doesn't have built-in meaning. We're designed to give it the meaning. So it's a neutral prop that happens. When we define it as negative, we experience it that way. Now, that doesn't mean you start calling negative things positive things. What I'm saying is, when you define it for yourself as something happened, oh, this happened out of negativity because of something, this and that. You are setting yourself up to only experience that thing that happened in a negative way. But when you understand that you can stay in a positive state and get a benefit somehow from what happened, even if it actually was created from negativity, you can get a positive benefit out of it if you are willing to stay in that positive state and learn the lesson that it's there to teach you. So, if nothing else, on the most simplistic level, seeing something you don't prefer by contrast, can help you understand more clearly what it is you do prefer. That's a positive way to use what you don't prefer on the simplest possible level. We can always see the light more clearly by allowing the darkness to be there, because the darkness shows us the opposite of what we really prefer. So it can open our eyes to see the light by allowing the darkness to actually manifest. So we can't be afraid of the negative side. We have to use it to our advantage because both sides serve in some way, shape, or form. So I think that's one of the more important things for us to remember, that no matter how we react to things that happen, if we stay in a neutral, positive state, balanced state, we'll be able to use everything to our advantage if we're creative and imaginative and loving enough. So it's not about reacting to things and saying everything has gone wrong. It's about going, how does this serve us? How can I use my curiosity to understand how can we move forward even with this? That's where we need to be to get through anything we perceive as chaotic or unbalanced or negative. We have to bring our curiosity to say, how is this going to serve us? How is this going to propel us? How is this going to accelerate us into the future we say we prefer? How can I use this to our positive advantage, no matter what it is? Now you're talking about true expressions of self-empowerment when you stay in that state and can use anything that manifests to your positive advantage, then it shouldn't matter what happens.
Those are such beautiful married items. The first conversation about the distinguishing between responding from fear or responding from true love, passion, excitement, the difference. And then once past that, navigating, well, I think actually what precipitates that is knowing who you are. And then that step about the fear versus the excitement and the difference. And then this next step that you're talking about, I find this very, very interesting, is how we manage, how we perceive, and not adding meaning to something. Because people who are going to step out, if they are in a fear space and they're going to leave that and make a bold new choice for themselves, I think sometimes still have to navigate, some remnants of what comes with that. Feeling in a space, I'm suddenly single, and what that means. I'm suddenly not in a job with confines that, even though it was uncomfortable, I deem secure. So, that navigating that next step to remember to separate from all of the minutiae that comes down usually, and it's often not ours.
But you have to honor your belief systems, like Bashar says. Like, if you're doing a job, it's not necessarily representative of your passion, but you firmly believe you need that to sustain yourself, don't abandon it until you actually know for a fact that your passion can sustain you, because there would be no point to that. So the idea, though, is even if you're doing that and doing something that you're not passionate about, at least give yourself an opportunity when you can to act on your passion and give it time to prove to you that it can sustain you and support you. Then it'll be easier for you to make the shift, letting go of things that you're not excited about and continuing to move in the direction of your passion, because then you've proven to yourself and allowed your passion to prove to you that it can, in fact, support you. I mean, on a very practical level, it's always supported me. There has only been one very brief period in my life early on after I got out of school that I worked at a job at a bank that is obvious for me was obviously not representative of my passion. It just wasn't my world. Since that time, I have never, ever, ever done anything that wasn't representative of my excitement. Now, I'm 73 years old, so I've been doing this for more than half a century. It has always supported me. It has never failed to do so. I know this concept works even before I even knew about Bashar. That's just the way I was built to just, I'm not going to do something that is not representative of what feels right to me, what feels exciting to me, what is truly resonating with my core frequency of who I am. It has always supported me for more than half a century. It will support anyone who truly understands that that's the way things work. But it's up to them to decide when they're comfortable to accept that as a reality. Because if they don't accept it as a reality, it's not going to work for them. They're going to still have to rely on the things they may not be passionate about, but they firmly believe will support them. So don't divest yourself of support until you have proven to yourself that your passion can support you. That's just a practical way to approach it.
Thank you. Yeah, that's fully fleshed out. I want to shift to two space-type questions. First one is about a stargate. Can you describe what a stargate is, what it's used for, and is it possible for an individual to walk or energetically go through a stargate, or do they work only for ships?
Stargates are electromagnetic portals. They can be passages to other dimensions, parallel realities. It's unusual for an individual to actually pass through one. They are mostly geared in a way to be taken advantage of by technologies that know how to open them in a certain way that is in alignment with being able to pass through it with purpose. It's not that people can't sometimes, rarely, accidentally walk through some of them, but usually the only effect is they will feel that time has shifted somehow, or they've lost time, or something along that line. They might be disoriented. You actually have to have a frequency that is vibrationally in alignment with the portal, with the stargate, in order to actually take advantage of whatever it's actually linking you to. It's not something you can just sort of randomly. It would be a one in a million or one in a billion shot that your frequency passing through a Stargate portal would be aligned exactly as it needs to be in order for you to take advantage of where that portal actually leads. So, more often than not, the effect is simply disorientation in space and time temporarily. But those cultures that have learned how to deal with portals, they know how to align their frequency either technologically or biologically with the portal in such a way that they can actually take advantage of where the portal leads. Now, I think one example that we're beginning to learn how to do that is what's happening on Skinwalker Ranch, because there's definitely a powerful portal there. They're definitely investigating it. They have discovered something that I don't think they realize what they have yet. Is that there's this frequency that they keep running into called 1.6 gigahertz. And I think that when they broadcast that and they get a reflection back, that's an indication that the portal is actually open in the proper alignment. But I don't think they quite know that yet. But they're starting to learn that. But this is the technology that a lot of advanced ETs have. They know how to align the vibrational frequency with a portal to actually take advantage of where that portal or stargate actually leads.
That's incredible because you wouldn't have known this, but I'm actually interviewing two different people, two different separate occasions who work at Skinwalker Ranch in the next couple of weeks.
Cool.
Synchronistic.
Yes.
And when you talk about the stargates, are they predetermined? In other words, this is a stargate to this particular galaxy only, or is it something that the extraterrestrial life force can go to the Stargate and then set it up to go in any particular place they rather be at.
What I'm getting is it depends on the portal. It depends on the nature of the electromagnetic energy in that portal. Some of them may be very specifically linked to certain locations in space and time, and some of them may be broad enough that you can actually tune where you want to go in that portal. So I'm getting that there are both types, but you have to know what you're doing to be able to tell the difference.
Okay. And I know you've also talked about splitting prisms and entirely different realities, all like incredibly fascinating stuff. These taking form. Why are our choices, why are our vibrations that we align with creating this kind of profound impact?
Well, this is the way existence is structured. Remember, we're always shifting. The idea of what we experience as time and space are side effects of that shift. So remember, there's only one moment in existence, there's only one place in existence. You can refer to it as a dimensionless point. You can refer to it as a timeless now. But anything that we consider to be a different location or a different moment in time is actually a perception of the same location, the same dimensionless point, and the same timeless now moment, but from another angle, another perspective, another point of view. So the very act of consciousness generating the experience of multiple locations and multiple moments in time is the act of generating parallel realities. So we're constantly shifting because we're constantly experiencing a new moment, a new place, a new location. And that's because our consciousness simply references itself, relates itself to that single place and that single moment in that way of looking at it from an infinite number, an infinite array of perspectives that creates this experience that appears as the illusion of distance and time and change and, all of that. So our consciousness inherently generates parallel realities, even in the creation of the experience of space and time, because there is no space and there is no time. And so to experience space and time, consciousness is creating the very idea, the structure, the underlying structure that we refer to now as parallel realities. That's just the way nature is built. That's the way existence is structured. That's the way consciousness experiences itself. It just naturally generates multiple parallel realities in order to experience itself as it relates to the fact that there is only one place and one moment in existence.
Wow,
I hope
mic
that was
drop.
clear.
It is, and I just want to thank you. You give so much value and content, and it's so provoking in the best possible way. I
Thank you.
want folks to know how they can be with you in person or online. So we know about January Sedona channel panel. That's
Right.
get tickets, debbiedashinger.com/Sedona. February is the Conscious Life Expo where you come every year. And you channel Bashar, which is amazing. And that's again February 7th through the 10th, 2025. Go to debbiedashinger.com/CLE. What else? I know you are busy these days. I'm watching. So tell us all the ways
Yeah.
we can find you.
Anytime they want to join the monthly Zoom sessions that we do with Bashar, that is to go to bashar.org, bashar.org. The list of events will be there. They can also access any of the recordings that have already been done. If they want to know more about what I'm doing personally, they can go to darrellanka.com, DarrellAnka.com, to look at books that I've written. And if they want to come to LA and play an escape room, they can go to boggledescaperooms.com, which I own with my wife, Erica. So BOGGLED, boggledescaperooms.com. And this is what keeps me busy right now.
And I went to Boggled with my partner and another couple, and we were definitely boggled, by the way. It's pretty genius what Daryl and Erica have created. It's fun, it's challenging, it's artistically off the wall. The thought that they put into creating this from start to finish. So go have some fun, bring friends, bring family, and they're just have rolled out a new one. So now there's two rooms, and hopefully this year, a third one. So there's lots to keep you coming back and enjoying that. And Daryl, usually here I would say, what do you next dare to dream? But because we are upon the holiday season, and I just want to take a moment to ask a different question. What are you, Daryl, grateful for? What fills you with gratitude right now?
I am very, very grateful when people come back to me and they say that Bashar's information has really made a difference in their life in a positive way. It's very gratifying. I really deeply appreciate that. And I appreciate the idea that the information that comes through me from Bashar really does help people. It makes such a difference in the world for me. I am very, very gratified that it makes a difference for other people as well. So that's what I'm grateful for because I think it's changing the way the world works in my experience. And it's more like the world where I feel like it's home to me. So I want to thank everyone profoundly, deeply, with great appreciation for being willing to be open to change your lives in ways that are more positive and constructive, it makes a big difference for everyone to be a living example of what others can achieve as well. So I'm very grateful for that. And I'm grateful for you and shows like this so that we can share these ideas with people. Up to them whether they're taken or not, but I'm grateful that these outlets exist. So thank you for the work that you're doing too.
Show us your beautiful t-shirt one more time, please. I rather love that. So do
Citizens for Disclosure.
I.
Yes.
Perfect.
Get the information out there.
And Daryl, I also am so grateful. I'm so grateful that, especially when you gave us this timeline of having once very early on worked at a bank, but other than that, you have followed your passion. Thank you for following your path. Thank you for where
Absolutely.
your path has led you. Thank you for the beautiful, selfless work that you do in the world. And really, thank you for being you. Thank you to you and Bashar for everything you give to us. I am so touched by both of you and being a part of your world.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much. You too.
I end today's show with this quote from Daryl Anka. The energy you give off, based on your beliefs, your emotions, your behavior, the vibrational frequency you give off is what determines the kind of reality experience you have. Because physical reality doesn't exist except as a reflection of what you most strongly believe is true for you. That is all that physical reality is. It is literally like a mirror. Subscribe to this number one transformation conversation, Dare to Dream, like, leave a comment. We read them all. And in the next weeks through the end of the year on the show, we've got some great guests lined up. So you're going to want to subscribe to know when these roll out. Suzanne Giesman will be here, Teal Swan, Rebecca Dawson, Thomas Winterton, Marie Diamond, and Barbara Lamb. Thanks for joining us today. I am truly, truly grateful for all of you and for this amazing journey we've all chosen to be on together.
Thanks for joining us this week on Dare to Dream. Make sure to visit our website, debbiedashinger.com. That's DEBBIDACHINGER. You can subscribe to the show on YouTube and all major podcast sites, so you'll never miss an episode. While you're at it, if you found value in this program, we'd appreciate a like and comment, or tell a friend about the podcast. That will help us out as well. And if you like this conversation, you might want to check out Debbie's shamanic healing programs. And Debbie is available for coaching to write your book, and her company takes your finished book to guaranteed international bestseller. Be sure to subscribe for our next episode of Dare to Dream podcast with Debbie Dashinger, your number one transformation conversation.